Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:11 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is June 23rd. Jay Powell today was testifying in front of Congress, and or the House of Representatives. And I thought there was one thing in particular that he said that really resonated with me, and I thought was would probably have a negative effect on markets. But so far, it's been a delayed reaction because the stock market reversed an earlier decline and finished on positive territory, but it, certainly not in a dynamic manner. And in fact, there's been a distinct absence of upper dynamics, which suggests to me at least that this continues to look like a distribution in the stock market. But what he had to say I thought was interesting. So it's about the Fed balance sheet. Somebody asked him, I think it was Representative Barr, asked him right towards the end of the testimony, what about the Fed balance sheet? How big a decline are you going to remove? So first thing is that he said that they're not going to be selling mortgage bonds. They're going to be selling treasuries. And that they're looking for a reduction in the balance sheet of between 2 and 3 trillion. Now, that's a lot, considering that the size of the balance sheet went from 4 to 9, and it's currently around 8.9, and they've only barely just begun quantitative tightening. To shave an extra couple of billion off of that would be a really phenomenally large tightening. And considering that between early 2018 and the end of 2019, they took 750 billion out of circulation. To double or even triple or quadruple that amount would represent a magnitude of tightening that's really quite considerable. But then he corrected himself and he said, well, in fact, what we do look at is the size of the balance sheet relative to GDP. So the Fed must have thought that they were really tightening a lot going into 2018-19 because the size of the balance sheet relative to GDP was contracting quite quickly. So that's, and I'll just overlay that chart, it's quite different from this, the fact that the balance sheet didn't really go anywhere between 2014 and 2017, but because the economy was expanding, well then they believe that they were in fact tightening. So now we've had this extraordinary move on the upside, and it's only just beginning to roll over. So now, if instead of him saying for taking it out from 2 to 3 trillion, maybe he meant that it would go down to three, between 2 and 3. So that would be reducing the size of the Fed's balance sheet from about 3.6 times to 3 times GDP or 2 times GDP. It's a different way of measuring it, and it probably is more accurate from the Fed's perspective to look at it that way. But one way or another, what he's talking about is a magnitude of tightening that I don't think that the market has been pricing in. So bond yields have been coming down, and the 10-year yield got down to 3% in here today and then bounced a little. So it's hovering now around the 3.09%. So it's unwound about 50 basis points. But the bigger point here is that the break above, and perhaps it's easier to just put it on a weekly chart, the break above 3.25 has not been sustained. And if we start to see bond yields pulling back below 3%, well, then we're very clearly going to have a failed upside break. And a failed upside break would suggest that we're at least going to come back down and test the lower side of the range. Well, before the pandemic, the lower side of the range was 1.5%. So that would be a halving of yields from where they are right now. So we're really at a rather interesting juncture right now. Because if the Federal Reserve goes ahead and tightens to the magnitude of tightening that that Jay Powell is talking about today, well, we're definitely moving into a recessionary environment. Now let's think about copper. So copper prices have pulled back in an exceptionally violent manner in here today, down almost 20 cents. So this is a completing type 2 top formation. We have the failed upside breaks, massive reaction against the prevailing trend resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, which I would also consider to be a first step below the peak. And now we're getting it breaking downwards. And lots of commodities are rolling over. So nickel prices spiked because of a huge short covering rally, and now they're giving up that gain again. And then I'm posting a chart today of the supply of lithium that's coming out of let me just find it, Chile. So this is a huge spike. They've just had an election in Chile. So exports were pretty stable, and particularly relative to this spike until May. And there is the potential that the government is going to move in and try and take control of this business. So anyone who's in charge of the business right now, well, they have a clear incentive to sell as much lithium as they possibly can in a short period of time to just basically take a windfall before there's the potential for nationalization. Lithium prices haven't really started to come back down yet, but copper prices are coming down, nickel prices are coming down, and also cobalt has been contracting as well. And this isn't admittedly the most liquid of markets, but it is back in the region of the 200-day moving average. So then when we zoom out a little and look at the LME Metals Index, well, this is a very clear break. So it was a very impressive acceleration. It went straight up and now it's coming down hard. I think it's exceptionally important to contrast what we saw after the credit crisis with the incredibly impressive advance and the end of the initial rounds of quantitative easing and then the big decline afterwards, because this is a similar size and even faster advance than we had then, and now we're getting an additional big pullback, and it's a failed upside break. So the breakout to new highs has not been sustained, and we're coming down hard and heavy. Now that's particularly good news for battery manufacturers. When we think about China, CATL has come out with their new battery chemistry in here today. They've got a battery now that will charge quickly and has a range of 1,000 kilometers, or about 650, 20, something like 620 miles. And that's obviously impressive. It's going to go into production next year. So that gives a really strong competitive advantage to anyone who's buying their batteries. And what's, I think, particularly relevant is that BYD has been exceptionally strong and a relative strength performer, and is still right in the region of the highs from late last year. But when we think about other competing companies like LG Chem or Panasonic, they're trending downwards. And Tesla has also broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. And I think that's particularly relevant as well. So it might be stabilizing around the $600 level, but there was a really very clear, consistent sequence of higher reaction lows, and it's been broken. So we're in a supply-dominated environment. Now, when we think about what's going on out there in the wider world, well, commodity prices coming down rather heavily is certainly something that should give people pause. Oil prices were down as well in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. There's still a lot of argument about supply and demand. So it's not really all that different from what we had back in 2012 through 2014. There was this big argument about the outlook for demand growth and the surging supply. Whereas today we have the argument about contracting supply and also potentially contracting demand. And then that's at the moment at least being netted off one against the other, and prices have so far held up. But there are big downward dynamics, and it's looking increasingly toppy. Then we have this really exceptional change in natural gas. So US natural gas prices are down from 9 to 6. So export capacity has been knocked out. There's an excess of supply as a result. Well, what this obviously, and I think is a clear example of, is that there is no shortage of natural gas in the USA. It's that they were exporting as much of it as they possibly could, and now that export capacity has been curtailed, the price is coming back down. Once that export capacity is back up and running, well, then there's the potential for prices to go back up again. We are, however, seeing that the knock-on effect is that prices are beginning to rise once more in Europe. So the German government is putting into place its level two control over the natural gas market. And I think before we get to the winter, they'll have already nationalized it. That's their level three, that they're going to just simply take over the natural gas business. So the UK natural gas price popped on the upside last week, came back down again, and is starting to stabilize. But then Netherlands natural gas has broken out. So it's pushing back on the upside here, and we're not really all that far away from the all-time peaks. But it's also worth looking at the active contract for base load electricity in Germany. And it was up in a dynamic manner in here today. So this is a big move. Now, we can also look at it on a continuation chart. So let's put that up because it is a futures contract. So we're pretty close to the all-time peaks. So obviously there was a big contract change at the beginning of the year, but we're back in the region of the peaks from December. This looks eerily similar to the natural gas price. So there's a clear link there. The vast majority of European coal companies have already gone bust. There are a small number of shares that are still traded in the UK, but Drax, for example, is the last of the coal-fired power stations, and that's obviously going to be called on. Then there's smaller companies, and when I say small, I really do mean small companies in the UK. And I'm going to have to remember, I'm really not remembering the ticker, so I'm gonna pull that up as well. So here is the chart of Berici or Bisici, and it has also been surging higher because of demand for coal. Now, one thing that I thought is interesting is that uranium hasn't really been making a lot of headlines. Of course, part of the reason for that is that it's a longer-term solution, and we're not going to be building coal-fired power stations in, or excuse me, we're not going to be building nuclear reactors in the short term. But SMR, which is the new name for NuScale, so that's small modular reactors. Well, it is steadying following its merger with the SPAC. So the price is doing somewhat better. So even in an environment where we have certainly a very uncertain outcomes because of the war in Ukraine, the outlook for Europe and clear recession risk, The fact that the Federal Reserve is very intent on curtailing speculative activity, but they're still promising technology innovations. So that's certainly true with CATL in China, and then also with small modular reactors. Fortunately, I did sell my Rolls-Royce position in here today. And part of the reason for that is, well, the trend is downwards. That's certainly part of the reason. But until the fourth quarter of last year, I really thought that this was going to be a type two bottom. And it's looking like we're going to move into more of a lengthy base formation where there will be surprises on both the upside and the downside. And if we are moving into a period of significantly slower global growth, then industrials aren't likely to do particularly well. So I took the profit and walked away from Rolls-Royce, and I also went short of copper because it looks like a type 2 top formation. So I'm reducing my investments and I'm increasing my various short positions because I think that the surprises are going to be on the downside. Now, when we think then what's going on in Europe, the majority of stock markets were in negative territory. And there are so many central banks around the world that are raising interest rates and attempting to get out in front of inflationary pressures. And the euro is stabilizing around 104. The Federal Reserve is still raising rates faster than any other major central bank, but the rate of change is slowing down because the ECB is expected to raise rates by a quarter of a point next month. Switzerland has already raised rates by 50 basis points. Norway did the same thing. The UK has been raising rates incrementally for a while now. It hasn't really had a big impact on the currency, but it is stabilizing, and there's the potential that they will continue to raise rates. So I think these are rather important points that we're seeing increasingly competitive currency appreciation. Every country wants to try and get in control of inflation. And one of the easy ways of doing that is to let the currency appreciate or create the conditions for the currency to appreciate. That makes imports less expensive. But of course, it also then reduces the competitiveness of the export sector. And Jay Powell avoided being overtly saying that the USA has a strong dollar policy, but he definitely mentioned that it was beneficial in terms of the ability to fight inflation. So we're certainly still in a more difficult environment. But value is starting to accrue. And the Nasdaq was in positive territory in here today, up about 170 points. So back in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range. But the big question then is, where's the big supply of new money going to come from? The Hong Kong market was in negative territory today. The Chinese market was in positive territory, or sorry, it's the other way around. Hong Kong was in positive territory. Then, when we think about China, their the credits or the liquidity situation there is turning around, but there's certainly an acute reluctance to flood the market with liquidity. Europe is beginning to raise interest rates, but it's unlikely that they're going to begin reducing the size of their balance sheet. And they are going to have to try and provide liquidity to the periphery. And then, of course, there are going to be legal challenges to this direct support for regional governments. And but it's a needs must reality. So Italian yields are coming back down. They were down by 15 basis points in here today. When we think about the German Bund, well, it surged on the upside, but now it's also starting to come back down again. So this also helps to highlight the chicken and egg relationship that we have in the markets right now. Investors have been selling both bonds and equities at the same time because of inflation. Rising yields are tightening up of liquidity, and therefore bonds fall with equities. Now bonds are starting to catch a bid because of deflationary forces. Well, or fears of longer term deflation because of the risk of a recession. But of course, if that happens, then interest rates won't rise as much, and it's positive for equities. But if equities recover, and then that's only going to encourage central banks to continue to tighten. And of course, if they continue to tighten, then bond yields go back up. So we're in very a difficult environment because there's been a clear correlation between bonds and equities. There's obviously this continued instinct to buy the dip in stocks, but the reality is that bonds aren't rallying for a good reason. They're rallying because of an economic contraction. One of the big challenges for equity investors is that we've had a significant pullback, and the pullback is pricing in future trouble, but we haven't had a meaningful change yet in earnings. So the forecasts for earnings are still high. And we've seen, for example, that the PE for on the S&P 500 has contracted rather meaningfully. Now, let me just, this is the market cap. So let's put up that PE ratio. So the PE ratio has come in from 30 to 19. And looking at this alone, one could be forgiven for thinking that stocks are now reasonably priced. But that is on the assumption that earnings don't fall. And the reality is that if we are moving into a contraction and inflation is eating away at disposable income, well, then it's quite likely, practically baked in, that earnings are going to deteriorate. Well, if the price stays steady and earnings go down, the ratio goes up. And then stocks start looking more expensive even after a bigger pullback. So I just don't think yet that we're at the end of this selling pressure. But I do anticipate that there will be a lot of chop and change because we've been through a almost 15-year bull market, and or I guess it's 14 years to be more accurate. And buying the dip has worked every single time, but buying the dip has worked in conjunction with central banks providing additional liquidity, and we are just not there yet. And until that happens, or investors believe very clearly that it's going to happen, well, then we're going to remain in a corrective phase. And I think with that, I will wish all the best to all of you.